Good morning and welcome back. Welcome back to JFK Spotlight on Health. This is where we highlight the groundbreaking work that's being done at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. It's part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. And joining me this week, once again, a encore performance from Dr. Paul C. Udicci, Regional Chair of Medicine Central Region, Hackensack Meridian Health Network, and Professor and Vice Chair of Medicine, Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine. Welcome back. How you been?
Oh, thank you so much, Joel. It's great to be back, and it's a great time to be at JFK University Medical Center, to be part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network, and to be part of the Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine. Great things are happening in all of those areas and so many more. I'm not sure there's enough time in the day to cover a great deal of it, but there's a few things that I think are worthy of discussion for today that really impact the care of people in our community, you know, the people who are part of our family and the people around us all the time. It's a great time to be in the world of medicine. I gave a recent short speech at the resident graduation last week, and I said exactly that. This is a great time to be practicing medicine, but it's also a great time to have things taken care of in a better way than ever before. It's not a great time to be sick because we don't want to be sick. But if you are, we have tools, techniques, knowledge, abilities beyond anything we could have imagined a decade ago.
Now, you mentioned your speech to the residents, and I did a little digging on you. I don't know how long ago this was, but you were, back in your school days, you were intern of the year, resident of the year, fellow of the year, and teacher of the year. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You know, I've been blessed in my life to be surrounded by people who have shepherded me, have mentored me, and have helped me in ways I could never repay. But the best way I can try to honor them and what they did for me is to pay it forward by trying to help others to be successful, by sharing the things I know, and by learning from others how to do things better. And that really is a reflection on the great people in my life. I'll count my dad and mom among them, though not doctors themselves, but nevertheless so important in helping me to appreciate all that I've been blessed with and given in life.
Oh, that's very nice. That's very nice. So let's talk about, you mentioned how it's a great time to be in medicine, and so obviously there's been lots of advances over the years. Let's start with one of the big ones.
Sure. I think, you know, we can do so much more now with so much less invasion of a person's body. It is astounding, and it's amazing, and it's wonderful. And I'll give you some examples of things we can do here at JFK University Medical Center and other hospitals in the central region and throughout the network that really impact the lives of the people for whom we care. In the past, if someone had the horrific statement made to them, "We see a spot on your lung," in the 60s and 70s, that had a connotation of imminent death because it meant if you could see it on an x-ray, it was pretty bad and it was likely to be cancer. But not always. But the only way in the 60s, 70s, and actually through about a decade ago, the only way to know for sure was to open up the chest and take out a piece of lung. And that operation is a big operation with, unfortunately, a fair amount of pain and a long recovery. And sometimes it was cancer. And sometimes it was not. It was an infection or old scar tissue, and unfortunately went through an operation with the same requirements for recovery. We can now, using a bronchoscope, and I'll talk a little bit about the advances in the bronchoscopy, with a bronchoscope, get to where that spot is and get use a needle to get a small biopsy of it and have that biopsy looked at by a pathologist while the patient is still under anesthesia and have an answer before the patient is awake.
Oh, wow.
Whether that's going to need more or we're done. And in fact, that happened recently. A patient who had a history of lung cancer was found to have three small abnormalities on follow-up CAT scan of their chest. And of course, the fear was this is cancer that's returned, and all of the bad connotations that have. But instead of having a surgical procedure and opening up the chest and taking out that segment of lung, and again with all of the necessary recovery that goes along with it and the pain, instead using a bronchoscope and robotic navigation, which I'll talk a little bit more about, Dr. Kalal Patel, who you've met and spoken with in the past, and I'm sure will again in the future, was able to thread his catheter to where those small nodules were and get small pieces of them to find out it was old scar tissue, not cancer. The cancer had not come back. It avoided a big operation with all of the recovery and pain associated with it. And, of course, by the end of the procedure, they had answers and could tell the patient, you're okay. We'll keep screening and making sure it doesn't come back, but this was not what we feared. And the robot, what does the robot do? Because people hear about all this robotic stuff in medicine and think of all of the sci-fi movies and TV shows we may have seen in the past. The robot really is an extension of the hands and mind and eyes of the operating physician who's doing the procedure and helps to guide the catheter or the bronchoscope or the endoscope, and I'll talk about that as well, to exactly the right place. And we do that, by the way, every one of us does that almost every day if we use any of the GPS or guidance equipment that most of us have either built into the car or nowadays just on our phones as a free app.
Right. So we're using that technology just in a different way.
Exactly the same. You know, you and I, driving to a place that we've not been before, rely heavily on those on that technology to not get off at the wrong exit or not take a side street, but to get us exactly where we need to go. And if traffic comes up unexpectedly, to route us around that traffic. Well, simply using the same concepts and combining with real-time CAT scan or x-rays while doing the procedure, the robot part of the bronchoscope in the hands of one of these experts like Dr. Kalal Patel and others can guide the catheter around traffic, around obstructions, through the smallest of airways, that's the air tubes in our lungs, and make sure that the catheter goes down exactly the right side street, to exactly the right spot to get to the right location to do the biopsy of the area of concern every time.
Is it every time? Is there ever a time where it goes down, I guess, the wrong vein or whatever you're traveling through, and you're like, where am I? Just like I do in my car with the GPS sometimes.
Right. The good news is because and this is where the technology has changed dramatically in the past couple of years. Because we can do this real time, we can tell exactly where we are at the moment. So if we've taken a wrong turn, right, that we've directed the scope or the catheter in the wrong direction, we will know real time that we're in the wrong spot. Let's back out before we put a needle or do a biopsy into something that we don't want to. So it really has dramatically improved and changed in the recent past, and we can expect that to continually improve in the future. And so as we read about these new devices, it's the recognition that we have to be better than we were before to avoid some of the risks associated with all the things we do in medicine. So I'm not aware of anything is possible, I'm not aware of any recent misadventure, doing a biopsy, the wrong thing, or going down the wrong tube and with the wrong airway or the wrong bronchus and hurting or damaging something unexpectedly or inadvertently.
Right. It's amazing. And it is when you're able to check something in the middle of the operation. Whereas before, the operation would end and you'd say, oh, everything looked okay, but we saw this. We're going to have to bring you back to check that out later. And now there's no bringing back. You do it right there, right then.
That's right. That's an important improvement, a dramatic improvement in how we can do things today versus not very long ago. You know, it's the difference between having, if you remember, and I bet you do, the first GPS devices, the Magellans and others that we sat on the dash, worked fantastic compared to using a paper map, but they only knew what information you put in.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to put in the place you wanted to go and the specific map that of that area. But that map may not have been updated, and there may be new roads or new side streets or new driveways that didn't exist when that map was first made. And so the earlier iterations of these robotic-driven or assisted procedures, we would generate a map by using a CAT scan, and that map would be loaded into the device, and we would use that map to guide the scope to where we wanted to go. But because that map may have been made a while ago, things may have changed since then. And, of course, the body is not static. Unlike streets, you know, our lungs are moving, our chest is moving, our heart is moving, the patient might be moving,
mm-hmm.
and that movement can cause us to take the side street that turns out to be a dead end rather than the street that leads us to the house we wanted to visit. And similarly, you having real-time access and being able to reroute as we go along and accommodate the previously unrecognized dead end allows us to be much more precise and accurate and get the information on the first drive down the road.
Yeah, it's amazing. Talking with Dr. Paul C. Yodici, Regional Chair of Medicine, Central Region, Hackensack Meridian Health Network, and Professor and Vice Chair of Medicine at Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine. Now, you were the Regional Chair. You're the inaugural Regional Chair, the first, right? So you're there from the ground floor building this cancer care center. Tell us how you went about getting that started.
Well, like as I'm sure has been true in your own life, it's always about the teamwork of a group of experts working together to build what's needed for the community. So, you know, cancer, that word is frightening to everyone. It doesn't matter what you do, where you've been in life, what exposure you may have had. That word brings horror to the hearts of all. And what do we all want? We all want to hear not only what you're going to do about it, but how soon can we start, right? When you find out something is abnormal, especially if it's cancer, you say, I want that out today. And that
sure.
often can't happen today. But that's how we feel. And we want at least a plan. We don't want to say, well, we'll see what happens. Because in our minds and in our hearts, we know it's happening. This cancer is growing and spreading, and I want it out so I can live. That's what we all think. And we've changed our approach in the world of medicine from let me call my colleague and schedule an appointment in a few weeks to let's walk across the hall to my colleague and I'll introduce you to someone who will help us figure out what to do so that before you leave today, we have a good plan in place so that you can live long and happy and healthy. And so in building any comprehensive cancer center, it is what do we need to have on site or nearby to make sure that that person leaves today with a good plan in place and can feel secure in knowing that they're not going to be lost, that they're not going to be left with having to make an appointment with someone else and perhaps not be able to make that appointment for such a long period of time that their fears grow along with their cancer. So looking at all of this, we look at what do we need to have in a particular site. Well, we need expertise. So we need medicine and surgery physicians who specialize in cancer care. So surgical oncologists and medical oncologists. We all understand oncologists being cancer specialists. Many people may not realize that they fall into two big general categories, those who administer chemotherapies or other therapeutics, and that's another area of great importance and change. Mm-hmm. And those who surgically remove that cancer and are part of the cancer team. So having both sides of that equation in one place helps someone to be able to be secure in knowing all of my problems can be dealt with by the expertise locally. In addition to having the expertise in all the various cancers, so this means bringing together the experts in lung cancer and airway cancer and head and neck cancer, GI cancers, colorectal, breast, GYN cancer, having that expertise along with the surgeons who can manage it, and having the ability to administer the therapy on site is also very important. Being able to say to somebody, you've now met with the medical oncologist who's come up with the chemotherapy regimen. You've now met with the surgical oncologist who said, we're going to give you chemo, and then I've scheduled you for the surgery to remove it. And in the near future, let's go upstairs and start the chemotherapy today, because we have an infusion center just one floor above all these experts. Means that a person can say, well, you mean I can start today? The amount of relief one feels after hearing the horror of a disease that they fear of all others is a relief beyond many other reliefs. The relief would be it's not cancer. But if it is, the next step is I want to take care of this now. I don't want to wait. I'm worried if I wait, it's going to grow, it's going to spread, and I'm going to die, and I don't want that.
Yeah, as soon as you find out that information, you want to take care of it as soon as possible. And I know I've heard stories, and maybe in the past, that it would be like, oh, yeah, we found something, it looks cancerous, come back in a couple weeks, and then we're going to do this. I mean, that's the way it used to be, right? And then there's a couple weeks, like, why are we waiting 2 weeks?
Nobody wants to wait two weeks, 2 days. And that's something that we are, in the world of medicine, doing a much better job about, as networks like HMH invest in having comprehensive cancer centers so that everything can be accomplished on site as needed in real time. And that makes a difference to the satisfaction, but also to the overall health of the people for whom we are caring. So building that together with my colleagues in surgery and in various oncological subspecialties is key and crucial for the population, for the community, for the people who live here, which includes my own family. Right, we have to take care of everyone as if they are our own family. In this case, they really are my own family.
Now I can come in and you find something for the first time, and I could start chemo immediately. I thought there was some sort of prep involved.
Well, it all depends, and I don't want to speak in too great generalities, but there are circumstances where other things need to happen before the chemotherapy is administered. So chemotherapy can be very targeted. Our newest treatments specifically target certain cancers, but we still use very broad chemotherapeutic agents which have side effects. So having a person prepared for what will next happen to them is very important. And we call that now prehabilitation, and it applies in so many more areas than just chemotherapy or cancer, but we stick to that concept for a moment. It sometimes might mean we need you to be healthier before we start this chemotherapy, because if we start it, we're going to have to stop it before it can be effective. Mm-hmm. So we're going to need to start you on this regimen of nutrition and physical therapy. Though you have cancer, in order for us to treat that cancer most effectively, you have to be able to successfully get that chemotherapy, and you're too weak or too tired or too malnourished to do that safely. Let's get you stronger so that we can give you the full course of therapy and have the best chance of beating this. So while we can start many things immediately, in some cases, for some people, it may need to wait simply because we have to, as you said, prepare that person better to receive the therapy or the surgery or both more safely and to its completion, because it doesn't help to get part of a treatment and then be unable to complete it because someone is too weak or too sick.
Yeah, prehab or prehabilitation. I never heard that term before.
Yeah, if we think about it, It is a description of what we really do in preparation for anything in life, right? So we study for exams. Well, that's sort of prehabilitation. We train for a marathon race, or we train for a bicycle ride, or we get ourselves in shape before the summer hits so that we can look good in our bathing suit. You know, so that all of those are examples of prehabilitation. We just never used that word, never thought of it that way. But in fact, it's what we do to prepare ourselves for something, something else.
Yeah, always getting ready for something. In this case, getting ready for whatever you need to get done. So you're expanding there. You're expanding to teach more students and more training programs. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
This is, again, a great time to be in the world of medicine. We are about to initiate an internal medicine residency training program at JFK University Medical Center. We already have a family medicine residency training program, and we also have a PM&R, which is rehabilitation medicine residency training program. We also have neurology residency training program with a number of subspecialties, but we've not had an internal medicine residency. So we are initiating that this July. Just a few weeks from now, we will have our first residents here at JFK UMC. And next year, the plan is to begin a surgery residency program. Now, the importance of residency programs is training future doctors, mm-hmm. but it also raises the level of care for the patients in our community because it makes all the people responsible for that care, one, make sure that they're doing the latest, best, most current management of all diseases. But I think there's one more thing that we often don't think about, and that is reminds us about all the steps we go through in the care of anyone. I'd like to use an example of the difference between doing something and teaching something and how it reteaches the teacher. Mm-hmm. So if we all, many of us have fantastic books in our lives and our families, whether it's making chicken soup or making meatballs on Sunday. You know, people who've been doing that very well for a long time don't need to think twice. They do it well, and it's delicious every time and wonderful. And they're experts at it. It's when someone needs to be taught how to cook that chicken soup or those meatballs that the same individual stops and thinks and say, oh, now I have to think about how much do I add and go through the step-by-step so they can learn it just as well as mm-hmm. I've been doing. And so if you watch any of the cooking shows, right, you can watch any of the famous people on TV and you know that they're already great chefs and now they're teaching somebody else how to cook the same meal. They go through each step and they think about what they're saying and they talk about the specifics of doing it and the application in another environment. In medicine, teaching medicine to other people, even amongst the most brilliant of experts, when they're put in a position of telling someone else how to do it or showing them, it causes them to pause, to think about what they're doing, and to explain it better to someone who's never done it before. And that translates into also explaining to patients and their families what you're doing, why you're doing it, a little bit better, which makes them happier because they understand more about what you've been doing for all these previous visits a little bit more. So it makes us all a little bit better because we have to teach it. It also teaches the future doctors how to do it properly, and it forces us to keep abreast of the most current changes in medicine and the newest advances because none of us want to be embarrassed when someone else might know when somebody else might know something that we ourselves may not have known. So we tend to keep atop of the literature and the new advances in medicine a little bit more. In addition, these residents will be having medical students from the Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine joining us here at JFK UMC in many different disciplines. And to the credit of the physicians in the community, many of them have enthusiastically embraced teaching these young minds how to do what they do so well.
Dr. Paul C. Udici, Regional Chair of Medicine, Central Region, Hackensack Meridian Health Network, and Professor and Vice Chair of Medicine, Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine. Thank you so much for coming back and joining us once again.
Oh, no, thank you. It's been wonderful, as always, and I look forward to speaking with you again about whatever new things are happening in the future.
I appreciate it. Looking forward to it. For more information, go to jfkmc.org, or for a podcast of this show, you go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com. JFK Spotlight on Health is brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz. We talk again next week.